KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we'll get reaction and analysis to the recent ruling on homeschooling in California. Should homeschooling require teacher certification? And what is likely to occur to private schools and parents who elect to homeschool if the ruling that teachers must be credentialed should hold? We'll take all that up and talk about the pros and cons of homeschooling in the hour ahead with your calls and your emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. California Appeals Court ruled last week that parents do not have a constitutional right to homeschool their children without a teaching credential. Some 166,000 children are presently homeschooled in the state of California, and the ruling came about as a result of a child welfare dispute between the County Department of Children and Family Services in Los Angeles and a couple who were homeschooling their 8 children. In this forum hour, we discuss the ruling and what it means, and let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. I want to welcome first Peter Keene, Professor and Dean Emeritus of Law at Golden Gate University Law School. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Michael.
Good to have you. And we also have with us this morning Leslie Buchanan, who's joining us from up in Alta, California. She's president of the Board of Directors of the Homeschool Association of California. They're a statewide support group based here in Northern California. Welcome, Leslie Buchanan.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And we also welcome Dr. Gerald Tarazzi, who is Executive Director of the National Association of Secondary School Principals, and he's with us this morning from Reston, Virginia. Welcome, Gerald Tarazzi.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We asked, by the way, the California Teachers Association, and they declined to participate this morning. We also asked the National Education Association, and they also declined. Peter Keene, let me begin with you and get a background to this. There were rulings back in 1953 and 1961. Maybe we can get the kind of case law here and what was affirmed and what was changed by this.
Well, this case comes out of an investigation down in Southern California of a family of 8 children, and there were allegations that the father was both mentally and physically and emotionally abusing the children, and the Department of Social Services got involved in it, and it was brought before a court under a dependency hearing for the judge to look at the relationship between the parents and the children. And one of the things that came up, among other things, in terms of the treatment of the children, was the homeschooling of all 8 of the children by the mother. And the recommendation had been on behalf of the 2 children who were involved in this case, Jonathan and Mary, are the 2 younger children, that by their attorneys, is that homeschooling, that they be put in a public school or some school or under the tutelage of someone who had a credentialed teacher's license. The judge down there, even though he found that, in his own words, the judge speaking from the bench, that the education that the children were receiving, again, these are his words, was lousy, meager, and bad, he said that the parents had a constitutional right to homeschool their children under a couple of old Supreme Court cases that go back to the 20s. One, Pierce versus Society of Sisters. It had to do with an old Oregon law that was actually an anti-Catholic law. There were a lot of them at the time that prohibited children being schooled in parochial schools. And that was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. And here the appellate court looked at the judge's ruling, the trial court judge's ruling, and said to the judge, you used the wrong standard. Yes, someone has a right to make choices regarding the education of their children. However, the state also has the right to determine the quality of that education, and that the state's provisions that there be either someone being in an accredited public or private school or taught with someone by someone who has an accreditation certificate. Those requirements do not conflict with the constitutional rights of parents to make determinations about the education of their children, because the state also has that balancing right to make sure that the children are indeed receiving a basic level of education. So the Court of Appeals essentially said to the trial court, you used the wrong standard of law. Go back and take a look at it again. You do have the power to order that the children not be homeschooled.
So this can now be appealed to the Supreme Court and presumably will be.
It can, or the Supreme Court may just decide to depublish the opinion. That's another option. If the Supreme Court of California just doesn't want to take it up for all sorts of reasons, maybe it's a political hot potato, they're not ready for it now. It's not a great factual situation, particularly since you have these other overtones of abuse of the children. It's not just a pure question of a parent's right to do this absent other types of things. So if the Supreme Court depublishes it, then the whole thing goes away until it comes up some other time in another factual situation.
And the governor, of course, can get around this ruling.
The governor is attempting to get around the ruling. What the governor wants to do is have legislation to try and change the ruling to allow for homeschooling in the kinds of situation that you have relating to the Longs.
There is a sense, in fact, Michael Smith, who's the president of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, says that this ruling will effectively ban homeschooling in California. Is that too extreme, do you think?
That is too extreme. There's a lot of homeschooling in California and throughout the country, and there are ways in which homeschooling can be done, either with the parent getting an accreditation certificate, or in most instances, the person doing the homeschooling is associated in some way with a school that is accredited. Generally, they're Christian schools, even most of them evangelical-type schools, but not exclusively. And there, if there is sufficient supervision by accredited people within the accredited school nearby, then it's okay. It's not an either-or proposition or a zero-sum game. So I wouldn't agree with that extreme conclusion.
Peter Keene, again, is professor and dean emeritus of the law school at Golden Gate University Law School. And Leslie Buchanan is president of the board of directors of the Homeschool Association of California. And well, this is, by your lights, a terrible interpretation of the law, Leslie Buchanan.
Yes, it is, absolutely. We feel that the judge just overextended his reach in ruling what may have been best for this one family.
And your background as a homeschooling parent is not Christian or evangelical, as Peter Keene said most are. You were doing it for secular reasons.
Absolutely. I'm doing it for my kids.
And have done it for about a dozen years, is that right?
Yes.
So what other route is your organization going to take on this? I know there's an assembly bill that's been introduced by Joel Anderson, to overturn it. What's the status of that at this point?
Right now, our group is just encouraging our members to write and fax and call their assemblymen and encourage them to support, to vote for that resolution. We've also have a wonderful law firm that's offered to do some pro bono work for us and help us decide the best strategies and assist us in writing briefs and filing things with the court in hopes of having the ruling either overturned or depublished.
Well, what's wrong with requiring a credentialed teacher in a homeschooling situation? You can see certainly from the case that Peter Keene described that went on in Southern California that it can be a problem with child welfare and that maybe you'd want a credentialed teacher.
I firmly believe that the credentialed teachers that are now employed in the California public school system are not doing the best by our children, and that's why I'm homeschooling my kids. I don't think that my attaining a teaching credential that will teach me how to manage my time, write lesson plans, spot drug abuse, will have any bearing on how well I can teach my kids. I earned a diploma from the California public school system, and if they don't feel like that's good enough to keep me, to show that I'm an educated, well-rounded person, they need to go back and fix the public schools first.
Well, what about the argument that there are parents, unlike you, who are perhaps not necessarily abusing their children, like in the case in Southern California, but allowing their children really not to get a kind of education that we want for our citizens here in the state?
I think that is unfortunate, and I do recognize that that happens. But you have to understand that it happens in all walks of life. It's not just homeschooled children who might be deprived. There are children who are in horribly under-equipped schools. There are it happens everywhere. There's no one-size-fits-all solution to the problem. And by and large, people who choose to take the time to homeschool their children, the parents who choose to live their lives on one income and do without things that other people with two incomes can maybe afford, we're really doing what we feel is best for our children. And what's being taught in the public schools isn't always what's best for the kids either. It's a very deeply personal opinion, and it's not the right solution for every family.
Leslie Buchanan, again, is president of the Board of Directors of the Homeschool Association of California, a statewide support group based in Northern California. Dr. Gerald Tarazi is with us this morning. He's executive director of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. And I know, Dr. Tarazi, you feel this brings in oversight and a kind of checks and balance. Why is that necessarily more the case with a certified teacher?
Well, first of all, let me make it clear, the National Association of Secondary School Principals, we don't have an official position on this. Really what I'm talking about is my own personal experience. Having been a principal, a school superintendent, and the chief state school officer in the state of Connecticut for 8 years, I'm very conversant with homeschooling and have been involved for years. And I first want to say, I respect the homeschooling, I respect the parents' right to have homeschooling. I think what this case does, and it may be a bit over the edge, the case itself, and I'm not really going to get into the legal aspect of it, but I think what it does, if nothing else, it should energize the discourse or the dialogue about some of the realities and some of the tensions that are out there. Just about every state in the country has state, they all have state laws that speak to every child, having an equal educational opportunity, receiving a suitable program of instruction. We have compulsory school laws in all states, generally between the ages of 7 and 16. And what's always been troublesome to me, and it's a fine line. I mean, do states just totally abdicate their responsibility without, and I believe about 15 or 16 states have no real regulations on homeschooling, or I mean, do you go to the other extreme where we over-regulate homeschooling? And I think this judge's decision might, go to that extreme. But where I see a number of inherent contradictions, as a nation, we're all under the owner's burden of what is called No Child Left Behind, which says that you don't get an equal educational opportunity unless you have a highly qualified teacher, unless you pass state examinations, unless you meet what they call adequate yearly progress.
And forgive me, that's a federal mandate.
It's a federal mandate, but it implies all states. And they don't get any federal money if they don't comply with the mandate. And all 50 states are complying. And my point is the inherent contradiction is, there are a significant number of states where they don't take the state test. They aren't dealing with highly qualified instructors. And the person who's on this morning, Leslie, makes a good case. I'm sure in her particular case she's a very concerned, dedicated parent. But, we've had Washington, D.C., we had four children. They were found dead in their home. Supposedly the parent was homeschooling, and they were undernourished, and so on and so forth. I guess my key point is I personally have always felt we need some checks and balances. We should have homeschooling if parents want that. But there has to be some overriding responsibility in terms of the quality of the program, the extent to which they're meeting the same measures of success as other kids in the state. Otherwise, you just turn the whole thing upside down. And while there are committed parents doing homeschooling, I'm just concerned there's a whole lot out there that we have absolutely no evidence that they are. So,
what you're suggesting is that this ruling at least brings in more oversight.
I think it brings in the question of oversight. I personally think it goes a stretch too far saying you have to be a certified, qualified teacher, because candidly, even in the public school sector today, we're taking people who just have a degree in a subject, and we're suddenly saying they're certified teachers, which defies my definition of what a certified teacher should be. But that aside, I mean, I've known a lot of quality people. So I was in New Haven, Connecticut. We had a lot of Yale people who homeschooled their children. They had master's degrees. They had, I didn't see any sense in them becoming a certified qualified teacher, but I'm just arguing for the point of some level of oversight, because absent oversight, I think states just completely abdicate their responsibility, and then what happens to compulsory school laws, what happens to meeting their mandate of Connecticut has said very clearly, equal educational opportunity and a suitable program of instruction.
Well, let me go back to Peter Keene. If this law holds, Peter, does it mean, you know, that we're going to actually have parents being prosecuted for doing homeschooling if they're not certified?
You could, yeah. I think what is more likely to happen is that there is going to be some sort of adjustment within the wording of the law to allow for degrees of oversight that don't have to be to the if the kid actually being enrolled in a school or for the actual teacher being someone certified. Because as the other guest mentioned, lots of private schools in particular have teachers who are not certified, and they're excellent teachers. What you're probably going to see is the law being tinkered with and some other types of provisions being put in, which will allow for people who are associated with private schools in some way to have some sort of check on what's going on. A visitation by a private school that the parents are associated with. In this very case, the parents themselves claim to be associated with an outfit called the Sunland Evangelical School in Southern California, and the Sunland had said, yeah, they're acting on our behalf, but there really wasn't any kind of connection. There wasn't any showing that Sunland itself did any type of oversight or review of the parents' the mother's performance as a teacher. So if you had something like that, I think that'll solve the problem. The problem is now you got a glitch in the law that everyone is rushing to fill, and I think they will fill it. But this case is a wonderful example of the old aphorism that bad facts make for bad law in terms of the factual situation with the family being so extreme. And if it had not been so extreme, I doubt that you would have seen this.
On the other hand, many homeschooling families have been avoiding truancy laws by registering with the state as a private school and then enrolling only their own children. In fact, Leslie Buchanan, I'd be curious to know from you whether or not the kind of suggestions that we're hearing from Peter Keene to tweak this law with more oversight, as Gerald Tarazi is suggesting, would be acceptable.
I think that there are families who utilize charter schools and public school independent study programs that that would not mind that. I personally enroll my private school with the state every year and enroll only my children in it. And I have problems with the idea of oversight simply because when you start introducing oversight, what you're going to start doing is requiring homeschooling families to teach certain standards, and that takes away our unique freedoms in tailoring our children's education to suit their absolute individual needs. Because my student body is so entirely incredibly small, I can take what works for each child. I can pull bits and pieces of curriculums from here and there and put them together. I can teach my 10-year-old child college level English, but maybe, you know, third grade math, because that's where he needs to be. I can make his education tailor fit to his needs. And if the state comes in and starts introducing standards that they want me to teach to, my child will not be as well off as he is now with the freedom that I have now.
Let me get a response from Dr. Tarazi on that. Oversight could mean a slippery slope as far as the state requiring standards, as Leslie Buchanan is suggesting, and how do you avoid that?
Well, again, I think this is where I continue to have a problem with what I think I call it an inherent contradiction. You have state law that says every child should have an equal educational opportunity and a suitable program of instruction. Now, in a state like California, like all states, they have a state test they give in basic reading and mathematics and so on. All kids in the state of California enrolled in public schools have to take that test. And I'm saying if a parent is going to homeschool a child, and I'm all for individualization, but, you know, ideally if California, through its board, state board and others, have agreed to what kids should know and be able to do in reading and math, we're talking about two core subjects. We're not talking about science or history or what have you. It just seems to me reading is reading and math is math, and California and all states have a responsibility to ensure that all kids are getting some level of education. I think where many of our principals complain, and this is I'll make a specific point, homeschool kids, most of them get involved or have the right to get involved in sport programs and other activities at the school, the extracurricular, co-curricular activities. Well, schools also have academic standards for those programs. For example, if you don't have a C-plus average, maybe you can't play football or be on the cheerleading squad. And so kids are put aside because they don't meet that average. Then a homeschool kid comes in, he says, well, my average is B-plus. By what standard is that a B-plus, and how is that fair to the other kids who are in the school? And I'm saying somehow, some way, I don't think any state can abdicate the responsibility. And I think you absolutely respect homeschooling if they had to take the same test as every other kid in the state to really prove that. If the state believes these are the core academic standards, I think every student, regardless of where their school, should have the responsibility to adhere to those.
Peter Keene, as we're coming up on a break here, let's get back to the underlying argument that has always pretty much created, in many people's minds, the backing or support for homeschooling. It really goes back to church and state in many ways.
It does. In fact, the most famous case of all has to do with the Amish, a case called Yoder back in the 50s or the 60s that many of us can remember. And essentially, the Amish community in Pennsylvania, they have a religious tenet that says at 14, their children's education has to stop. And the reason for that is they feel the kid's got to go work on the farm, and he or she is an adult, and it's education's over. No more messing around with the school books. Go milk the cows and plow the fields. And the Amish families were prosecuted under Pennsylvania laws, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, look, there's a balance here, and the balance is between Pennsylvania's desire to educate kids and to a basic education and the Amish desire to have this religious type belief. And here the court says the Amish come out ahead and win this one. They can get their kids out of school at 14 because at 14 they have gotten the basic things that are necessary, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that extra 2 years, although important, it's not crucial and therefore has to give in terms of the desire to have the Amish children at 14 under religious tenets join the community. So there's got to be a balance here, and there will be in terms of whatever laws that come up, are brought up. They have to be flexible. They have to deal with the rights of the parents to make choices, and particularly religious choices regarding their children. But they also have to give the state's interest, the very important state's interest, in making sure that kids have an education so they can survive later on when they become adults and aren't jobless or without resources. Those things have to be delicately balanced, the two.
Peter Keene, again, is Professor and Dean Emeritus of Law at Golden Gate University Law School. I'm going to open the phone lines and invite those of you listening to join us. Not only you may want to join us to react to the California Appeals Court decision that parents do not have a constitutional right to homeschool their children. You may want to join us to simply talk about homeschooling. Are your kids homeschooled, or did you think about doing it and decide against us? You can call us now, toll-free, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Again, that's toll-free, and it's 866-733-6786, or send an email. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. And in addition to Peter Keene, we're joined this hour by Leslie Buchanan, President of the Board of Directors of the Homeschool Association of California, and Dr. Gerald Tarazzi, who is Executive Director of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. When we return, your calls and emails on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In the wake of a California appeals court ruling that parents do not have a constitutional right to homeschool their children. We're talking about homeschooling this hour. We're joined by Dr. Gerald Tarazi, who is Executive Director of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. He's with us this morning from Reston, Virginia. And Leslie Buchanan is with us from Alta, California. She's President of the Board of Directors of the Homeschool Association of California. They're a statewide support group based in Northern California. And Peter Keene is Professor and Dean Emeritus of Law at Golden Gate University Law School. And let's go right to your calls, and we begin with Sheila. Morning, Sheila.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. You're on the air.
Okay. I am a middle school teacher, and I also pulled my son out of school when he was in seventh grade because he was falling apart and failing. And every day I teach students who I don't actually believe that the traditional classroom is the right place for them. I think that their needs would be much better filled somewhere else. Having said that, I'm very concerned about the curriculum that's covered if parents have the right to pick and choose what they teach, what they don't teach, especially in science and other areas that they may not really be familiar with the material. When I pulled my son out of school, I worked with my local district and got all of their materials. There was an advisor that if there was a subject I didn't know as well as my own subjects, you know, that could help me out with things like that. So I believe in some sort of accountability or guidance or testing so that the kids really are, at least there's some sort of checks and balances on the system.
What do you think, Leslie Buchanan? I mean, the idea that parents can be certainly, as many often are, weak in certain areas when they're teaching, and therefore maybe there should be some accountability and
I think that's where support groups like the Homeschool Association of California and even more so smaller local support groups come into play, where if I'm weak in science, I can meet other parents who then we can pool our resources and hire a tutor. Maybe one of the parents is even a science teacher already. We don't homeschool in a vacuum. I have a vast number of resources available to my children, and I actively make them available to my children because I want what's best for them.
Gerald Tarazi, what do you think?
Well, I think what Sheila said is pretty much the point I'm trying to make. I said earlier, I absolutely respect homeschooling. I think even the parents who are in homeschooling have a right to know how well their children are doing in relationship to a wider sample of kids. Otherwise, what is the standard? What is the achievement level? What is the comparison? And I think especially as we become much more of a competitive society, you know, and again, I think the middle school teacher said it well, not all parents are schooled to teach all subjects. And is it really fair to kids, I mean, to put them through a system where, you know, maybe they're not up to date in science and the mathematics and what have you. So I think you can have both worlds. I think you can have the standards. I think you can have the accountability, and then you're respecting the right of the individual parent to present the program. But somewhere there has to be proof that what's taking place at home at the very least is meeting what is generally the state definition of a quality education.
And we move on to Christina. Morning.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Thank you. I've been homeschooling in the Bay Area for 8 years, and I wanted to bring up about the private school system, which is, of course, how so many homeschoolers do their homeschooling in California. One of the things that this case really ignored is the fact that private schools in California, all of them, not just the homeschoolers who have two kids in their school, but all of the private schools in California, they are minimally regulated. They are required to file a document with the state notifying the state how many kids they have, you know, how many teachers they have, that sort of thing. But there is no requirement on the private schools in this state to meet any of the standards that the public schools are meeting.
Yeah, let me go to Peter Keene on this, because the private schools don't really need credentialed teachers. The ruling could affect all private schools in California, could it not, Peter?
No, actually it doesn't affect the private schools, and the caller is quite correct, because one of the specific areas in the education code that says a child's education is being satisfied is if the child is enrolled in a private full-time day school, and actually attends the private school. And that's all there, essentially, that there is to it. And speaking as someone whose kids did go to a private school, a very good private school, with excellent teachers, lots of them were not credentialed. So you do have this distinction there that the view that the caller has pointed out that may be a contradiction, that there may be some private schools that themselves might well have some problems, and because of the non-requirement of credentialing for instructors in private schools, to just apply it to the homeschooling parents is sort of one-sided.
So they get a pass? They get an exemption, in effect?
If they qualify as a private full-time day school, they get a pass from their instructors needing to be certified. Now, there are other types of accreditation requirements for the school as a whole, that it has to get through those particular measures and hurdles in order to qualify as a private school. But once they do, in regard to the individual teachers themselves don't have to be accredited.
Mark joins us next. Mark, you're on forum. Good morning.
Oh, hi. I sent my son to a public school, and I've seen the public school's failures, and I know some children that have been homeschooled, and I know some parents that homeschool their children, and I'd be curious if the failure rates were that much different. My hunch is they're probably not. But the main issue I had is the statements about that homeschooling families should be held to the same standards as schools doesn't make sense to me. It seems like apples and oranges. It seems the tests that are used in the schools are more about statistics and evaluating the schools, and it's a little bit harder for me to see how it would be applied to a family that's receiving homeschool. I mean, how can you it's difficult to discern whether the issue is with the student that has particular difficulties or whether the parent is doing a bad job of teaching. And anyway, it seems like you need a much different evaluation process than the kind of tests that support one child left behind.
Did you hear from Gerald Tarazi on that, Dr. Tarazi?
Again, it states vary in terms of how they use tests. And, you know, California's always been sort of a bellwether state when it came to assessment. And while what is publicly reported is the score of the school, what have you, and I agree, that's really always been a problem. But the tests are designed for the individual student, and the teachers receive good feedback on how each individual student is doing on the skills which California has determined are appropriate for all students, the richest students, the poorest students, the black, the white, the Hispanic students. And I think, you know, a good assessment can give very valuable information back to a teacher and even to an individual parent homeschooling. And I would think a homeschooling parent would want to know how his or her child is doing in relationship to other students, and where there are weaknesses, you address them, or where there are strengths, you reinforce them.
Can you comment, Leslie Buchanan?
I would love to. First of all, I'd like to point out that in California, the state tests that the public schools administer are not mandatory. Schools don't really tell you that up front, but you can opt your child out of any of the tests that the schools administer. The schools don't want you to opt out because they need a certain number of percentage of students to take them to comply with the No Child Left Behind Act. Also, if my child has to take the same test that a child in public school is taking, that means that I have to change my curriculum that I've researched and fine-tuned over the years to teach to the test so that my child can prove that he's successful. What I get to do is I get to work with my child one-on-one every single day. I know where my child stands educationally, and I know where his weaknesses are, and I know where his strengths are. And by contrast, we know a middle school math teacher who has 38 children in every class, 5 classes a day. He sees 190 students every day come through his classroom. I don't think that we can expect him to sit down and assess the test scores of every one of those children and define where they're weak and then give them the added support that they need in those areas. That doesn't happen.
We go to another caller, and it's Thomas from Philadelphia. Morning, Thomas.
Hi. I want to thank you for doing this, for having this show, because I am a product of a combination of homeschooling and private schooling. And my father, bless his soul, he meant to do me right, But honestly, the homeschooling I got, he was ill-prepared as a teacher. Ultimately, it started off as a relatively sort of broad curriculum. Resulted, he's a musician, and I basically ended up, he ended up teaching me how to play the accordion extremely well. But, you know, what good has that done me? I've turned into some kind of, you know, accordion playing, you know, performing monkey boy. I mean, I feel like this. They shouldn't even have accordion playing to kids, and that's why the homeschooling thing just didn't work out for me. When I finally went to school, I was, you know, ostracized for this ridiculous instrument that I knew how to play particularly well.
Well, I don't know how much accordion playing is tied to homeschooling, but in your case, it sounds like there's a real grievance there, and I thank you for the call. I mean, laugh about it, but here's an email, for example, just from an almost counterpoint. Enrique writes, my brother was homeschooled and is now at Stanford Law. My daughter was homeschooled and at 17 is in her second year at JC and scored in the top 12% on her SAT test. My eldest son went to public school in Oakland and is now a ditch digger. All right, make of that what you will. A few more emails I want to read before I get to more of your calls. This is from Sarah. It says, as a college educator, I appreciate that there is a lot of wasted time in our public school curriculum and that many schools are so focused on meeting No Child Left Behind requirements that students come to college lacking essential knowledge and skills, basic history and science knowledge, writing and critical thinking skills. Most public school teachers also feel that too much time is spent not teaching. However, I hardly think the solution is to remove students from the public school system to be taught by unqualified teachers. Teaching certification is not just learning how to make lesson plans or control a classroom, as your guest suggests. It's also about learning the material at an advanced level, getting up to date on advances in a subject area that have occurred since the teacher left high school. A person who only has a high school diploma is not qualified to teach advanced calculus, AP biology, etc. They cannot teach a language they do not know or an instrument they cannot play. I don't know about the accordion. They cannot meet the special needs of gifted children or children with behavioral, emotional, or developmental problems. Here's another listener. Joel says, I've been involved as a parent for the last 6 years with a school district in Marin. I have yet to meet a teacher who believes that the state standards that they should teach to are helpful or appropriate. They'd prefer to have an educator's flexibility. Instead, they bear the standards and do what they can to help the children. I think it's great that homeschoolers don't have to follow those standards. And Pam in Albany says, as a very progressive former inner-city school teacher and current homeschooling parent, I want people to know that homeschooling is not the purview of the religious right. Homeschoolers are all over the political and religious spectrum. Why do we homeschool? Well, when I was teaching, we were asked in a retreat to think about the ideal school for our children. I immediately realized that the ideal learning situation for any child did not look like a school at all, but a place where a person could have support for learning at their own pace and have the whole world as a classroom. And this from Sandra. Beyond educational standards, as a mental health professional working in the child welfare system, I can attest to the fact that many of the children that are determined to be abused and or neglected are almost always first identified through staff at their local schools. Absent this oversight, who can assure these children are homeschooled for the laudable reasons the guest exemplifies and not, sadly, as a means of hiding abuse, which abusers often resort to as a way to avoid identification? Do you want to address that, Leslie Buchanan?
I think that there are estimated to be a million children homeschooled in the United States. And every few years, there is a horrific, unfortunate story that comes up, and the children involved in abuse are homeschooled. I think that it's a sensationalistic claim that that homeschooled children are abused, or that we homeschool our children to hide abuse. That's not the case. And there are many, many children who attend public school who are abused, who are never identified. It's not, you cannot say that public school prevents child abuse. I don't agree
with
that.
Well, as someone who got beat up by a public school teacher, I would have to agree with that. Let me go to more calls in the meantime. Beth, you're on. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm also a product of homeschooling. I was homeschooled my entire grade school, high school curriculum. I'm now going to school in San Francisco for mechanical engineering. So I feel that the system helped me immensely. I had no issues with socialization growing up, which is always the question. I was involved with many, many groups, and I agree with the guest you have that's for homeschooling, saying that it depends on the situation, and it always depends on the situation. It always depends on the family, and it depends on the family whether you're homeschooled or whether you're going to public school. The system, I agree that there probably should be some kind of oversight.
No, I think you're right.
But I don't think it should be singled out to homeschoolers in the way that you guys are talking about right now.
I think you make a valid point, particularly about the, and a couple of callers have mentioned the wide spectrum of homeschooling's efficacy, depending on, you know, who's doing the homeschooling and what the situation is and all of that. But Gerald Tarazi, you know, there are many people who elect to homeschool their kids because of safety issues. I'm sure you realize that. And
yeah, of course.
There's a good argument there, isn't there?
Well,
depending where the school is.
Yeah, depending where the school is. And by the way, more kids are hurt in communities than they are in schools. The statistics on school violence are down dramatically. I mean, of course, one of the panelists said earlier, I mean, anything, even if it's a homeschooling situation, is always taken, you know, at a greater magnitude than the problem exists. But, yeah, I agree and I respect that. I think in this discussion, I think the bottom line is, there are some absolutely wonderful parents doing homeschooling. I think the one of our panel members, she seems to be doing a great job, but I don't know about all the others. I mean, I don't think the state knows about all the others in 50 states across this country. And at least in a public school, if you have a bad teacher, and we do have bad teachers, we have bad principals, the potential is always there to weed them out. I don't know how you do that in the homeschooling environment where, you know, there are just some parents who are just keeping kids out of schools. You defy the compulsory school attendance laws. We're concerned about dropouts in this country. And yet, you know, you can simply homeschool a child and he or she disappears from that statistic. I also want to make another key point, if I can, about the private schools that were mentioned earlier. You know, they can pretty much do whatever they want, but, you know, and this is why we take a significant position against voucher assistance to private and parochial schools. They can select the kids they want. They can remove the kids who aren't moving their standards. They don't deal with special education kids as a rule. They don't deal with the language problems kids have as a rule, and yet they want to take public money to support what they're doing in private schools. And I'm arguing if they want the public money, they have to play by the same rules. If they play by the same rules, then I think we'd be on a level playing field.
And again, Gerald Tarazi is Executive Director of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. And Peter Keene, yes.
Yeah, I think, Michael, one thing we can look at, there, you know, there's always a silver lining in some things. And there may be, just as a result of this ruling, about 4 or 5 years ago, Delaine Easton, Superintendent of Public Education then, tried to get the legislature to engage in some discussions on the subject of homeschooling and in order to do some comprehensive lawmaking relating to homeschooling, and she couldn't even get two legislatures interested in getting a discussion going, mainly because they're afraid of it, the political hot potato that we're talking about, all the other stuff, the religious aspects. But one of the things that this discussion we're having today, generated by this case, seems to indicate that Ms. Easton had a point. And there is, it's long overdue for a certain analysis of this in the legislature and a venting of it in society generally to come out with what's necessary. And it doesn't, it's certainly not going to be an either-or proposition in either way in terms of up or down on homeschooling. It's just going to be some sensible type oversight. And I guess the last point I want to make in counterpoint to your being beat up in public school, Michael, I was beat up by nuns and still bear the scar. But it was a great education.
We'll yeah. Compare scars one of these days, Peter. In the meantime, let me get more callers on here. Bill, join us. Good morning.
Hi, this is Bill. I'm product of public school and private school. My son's been homeschooled off and on for about 10 years. He was in public school and also in private school. The issues that I haven't heard addressed here are actually he's in an internet class where the teachers are all through the U.S. They have taught classes like Latin in high school for 20 years, English, biology. He's got a full biology lab at home, and he's taking algebra at home. But the future is the Internet. And so how does this law deal with that? Because more and more students are learning through the Internet. They're taking college classes through the Internet.
I don't know about high school classes through the internet, although... Yeah,
he's taken a high school class through the internet.
Yeah, I don't know how widespread that is, but it's, it's certainly a curious question to bring into this whole discussion. Peter Keene, some thoughts from you on that?
I think that it's part of that whole area that comprehensively needs to be addressed. The internet is something that has been shown to be a very strong tool of education, particularly on a higher level in colleges and graduate school, even in high school to some extent. But I think the internet could be a great tool, and probably is to some extent already, in regard to many homeschoolers who use it.
Let me thank the caller, and let me go to more of your calls. In fact, we'll go next to Fremont. John, you're on.
Hi. I'm concerned about how much of the objection to having to cover a particular curriculum for homeschoolers is really people trying to make religious and political statements, like avoiding teaching evolution. When I was a graduate student, one of the people that I taught wanted to be a doctor, and was homeschooled and had never even heard the word evolution before she got to college, and was extremely upset that she had been so disadvantaged in her biology and chemistry background.
Leslie Buchanan, I know that you've already stated that your own orientation has been secular, but I'm sure you've met a lot of people in the homeschooling world who have religious reasons, and some of them probably don't want evolution taught to their children.
Honestly, I haven't met anyone that has that strong a religious conviction, and I don't feel quite qualified to answer that question. The people that I know that homeschool their children give them really well-balanced educations, and again, I feel for that girl, but I think that that is an absolute minority of homeschoolers. I don't think that that's the status quo. I think that's the exception to the rule.
Well, Dr. Tarazi, you over on the East Coast have had maybe some different experiences on that score?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was in Connecticut, I think it would be fair to say, we had state board meetings. The majority of people who came, were religious oriented. They got up and read the Bible, to the Board of Education. So, we have a lot of people who are homeschooling for religious reasons. Having said that, I'm not suggesting it's the universe of people, but there are a significant number who have that inclination.
And we'll have an inclination for more of your calls. Susan is next. Susan, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. I live in Mountain View. I homeschool my two kids. My husband and I both do. And my husband and I agreed that we grew up with both going to public school, having certified, credentialed teachers. And we had a real mix of really excellent teachers and really awful teachers. And it didn't really seem to make a difference if they were credentialed or not. They were either good or bad, depending on their intent to be a good teacher or not. And I think other factors are much more important, like class size, a teacher's dedication, and their genuine interest in the student having success. And I think those factors are present to a much greater extent in a homeschool environment where the parents are the teachers and they really care about the success of their children.
And yet, Susan, let me ask you, because you are enthusiastic about the results with your children, and I'm sure, like Leslie Buchanan and so many other homeschooling parents, that you're very dedicated and worthy of teaching your children. There is this argument, though, that one hears not only about socialization, but that maybe parents shouldn't homeschool their own children for the same reason the pediatrician shouldn't treat his own or her own children. That, in other words, there's a kind of bias that can work both ways that really interferes with the professionalism that's necessary. What do you say to that?
Well, I can't speak to the interest of physicians treating their own children. I'm not a physician. But I would say that...
I didn't ask you to speak to that. I mean, just the idea, in other words, that you don't have the professional distance with your own children that you need.
I don't know that distance is really required. I know that I'm very in tune with my children's needs. I know that there are no facilities for gifted children in the public schools or in many of the private schools that we investigated, and our children have needs for a lot of high level of education and enrichment, and those just aren't available in the public schools. And I think because I am not distanced from my children, they are not just one of 30 or 40 kids sitting in a classroom before me, that I can really focus on their particular needs, their interests, their strengths, their areas where they need to develop more, that I can really give them what they need.
All right. I thank you for that. Let me go to Rachel, who may have a different view on this same topic. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there.
So I grew up in a community, in a church actually, where about 60 or 70% of the youth were homeschooled, and I was one of the few that went to public school. And something that I experienced was that so many of the students were just, I think that homeschooling was a disservice to a lot of them because they were just socially maladjusted, they were emotionally stunted. I mean, you could tell the difference between students, even if they had a little bit of socialization with each other, they just didn't do well as they became teenagers and, you know, got into the workforce. And I mean, this is my personal experience. I don't know the statistics, but there was definitely a difference in students that grew up, you know, having contact with each other through schools, learning how to communicate, how to argue and express their opinions with other students. You know, you meet someone that's homeschooled, they're like from a different planet. It just wasn't the same. So,
Leslie Buchanan, go ahead.
Well, my oldest son wanted to play football, and so he went to high school. He fit in seamlessly. He had no problems adjusting socially. My 15-year-old works one day a week for a friend of ours, and he has no problem dealing with the clientele that come in and out of our friend's shop. Our children are not maladjusted. There's a huge, wonderful, thriving community of homeschooled teenagers that my kids are a part of. I get compliments from adults all the time that my children are delightful to be around, that they communicate on an adult level with adults. They can carry on intelligent, well-thought-out conversations. I think that it's a sensationalistic story to talk about, you know, these poor, awkward, homeschooled kids, and it's blown out of proportion.
Well, I think this has been a very illuminating conversation, and we've learned a lot about the law, thanks to Peter Keene, and certainly about just the pros and cons of homeschooling, not necessarily being with a credentialed teacher or having credentialed teachers, meeting the needs of young people. I want to thank, in fact, our guest, Peter Keene, Professor and Dean Emeritus of Law at Golden Gate University Law School. Thanks for joining us this morning, Peter.
Thank you, Michael.
And thanks to you, Leslie Buchanan, President of the Board of Directors of Homeschool Association of California, joined us from Alta this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we thank Dr. Gerald Tarazzi, Executive Director of the National Association of Secondary School Principals, who joined us this morning from Reston, Virginia. Thank you, Dr. Tarazzi.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, our listeners. We are appreciative of your being with us here Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated in the evening, and we'll be back with you for another hour talking about immigrants and crime and immigrants incarcerated as opposed to native-born incarcerated in the hour ahead. New study on that. Thank you for being here. Remember that you can let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or calling 415-553-3300. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, as well as our executive producer, Raul Ramirez, and producer, Kevin Guillory, with production assistance from Polly Stryker, Inga Schrobsdorf, Tina Lauerberg, and Nick Vadinsky. Engineer is Jim Bennett. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.